Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. It's a beautiful Monday. We're thankful to be up and at it and all and alive and raring to go. You've got the Community Voice brought to you by Oak Mountain Academy and Tanner Health System. We thank them for their sponsorship. And it's going to be another beautiful week. We're honored to have in studio Jason Swindle, local criminal defense attorney. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Steve.
We're going to be talking about packing the court, but first a little bio on Jason. He did his undergraduate work at Georgia Southern. I was there for two quarters until they kicked me out. Law school at Walter F. George School of Law, Mercer University, 2001. Honors include selection to the Business Advisory Council, National Republican Congressional Committee, Millennial Honor Roll, National Rifle Association, Hunting Advisory Committee, memberships in the Carroll County Bar, Carroll County Chamber, Sexual Offender Registration Review Board, National College of DUI Defense, West Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, Georgia Court of Appeals, Supreme Court of Georgia, United States Court of Appeals for 11 circuits, and United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So that's Jason, who's been on the program before, and we're always glad to have him return. Well, the topic today has become a topic in the presidential election. The topic is packing the court. And we're going to want to find out what it is and what it can mean. The Biden-Harris ticket has been declining to answer whether or not they will pack the court or not. And I remember, I don't know if they still do it, I have no reason to know, but when I was growing up, many, many moons ago, before the internet, before cell phones, hard to believe, black and white TV, all we were talked about and told about in elementary school was basically the FDR attempted to pack the court, but it failed. And that's all we were ever told, and I never really delved into it beyond that. So give us a little history about the term packing the court and a little bit of the origins of in terms of the numbers of justices on the Supreme Court.
Well, I'm glad to be here again, Steve. Packing the court simply means adding new Supreme Court justices using the legislature, or in this case, the Senate and the House, Congress, to pass a president's legislation to add justices. It's pretty simple.
Okay. So and so FDR attempted this.
He did. It was unprecedented. Now, we've not always had nine justices on the Supreme Court. John Jay, our first Chief Justice, had only five associate justices. And through the 1800s, the numbers changed. But in 1869, the Judiciary Act of 1869 actually placed nine justices on the Supreme Court. And from that day until 1937, we had nine justices. In 1937, something happened. FDR, as we know, was a huge proponent of the New Deal. In fact, that was his baby. That was his mastermind. But at the time, there was a very conservative court. And so each bill that passed, or each legislative initiative that was sent to Congress, it would pass, and then it would go to the Supreme Court, and the president would lose 5-4 almost every time, like we had before. A couple of years ago, before President Trump successfully nominated two more conservative Supreme Court justices and one more on the way.
This evening, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. So he had a lot of political capital because he won a landslide election in 1936. So he decided to use his political capital to get his way. And he didn't look at history and the consequences. Instead, he was bullheaded. He alienated his own party. And he got one of his one of his friends in the Senate brought up the Judicial Procedures Reform Bill of 1937. And here's how it reads, which is pretty strange. It says, the central provision of the bill would have granted the president the power to appoint an additional justice to the U.S. Supreme Court up to a maximum of six for every member the court had that was over the age of 70 and 6 months. Okay? So that is getting rid of the old conservative guys, putting your liberal people in, and then getting what the executive branch wants. That's clearly an interference with the separation of powers. That's the president stepping into the judiciary via Congress and adding more justices. Now, some people would disagree because the Constitution doesn't provide for any number. You could have 100,000, I suppose.
Do you have any speculation as to why they did not name the number, the founders?
Well, the Constitution has some vague aspects to it. And, of course, they could not think of every single scenario that would come up. But it would have been, well, let me take that back. They probably did have some foresight. Because eventually we might need another justice or two. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot different because that's a caseload mm-hmm. issue. It's not a political issue. So the founders probably left that open for future growth of the United States.
So FDR being one of the most progressive presidents we ever had, from what I understand, he failed. Even though he was extremely popular and even the Democrats...
Actually, ironically, he didn't fail.
Okay.
He was embarrassed. His plan for packing the court, that failed.
Right, that's what I mean.
He lost a tremendous amount of political capital. The people didn't like it. But in the end, when he died in 1944, after serving, I guess, 12 years, he got to appoint 8 out of the 9 judges. And so he did not have to really go through this process. After this happened, judges started retiring, dying, and he replaced them with New Deal judges. So that's how he got the New Deal through. Not the court packing way,
mm-hmm.
but the right way.
But the legislature did say no to him when he tried to pack the court.
Yes. In fact, there's a very famous quote by Henry F. Ashurst, who was a Democrat chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, maybe the most powerful committee in Congress. And here's what he said, quote, "No haste, no hurry, no waste, no worry." And what that meant was, this bill's going to sit in the Judiciary Committee and it's going to die a slow death. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get you what you want, Mr. President.
Mm-hmm. Okay, our guest this morning is Jason Swindle, a criminal defense attorney. We're talking about packing the court. We're learning a lot about FDR and we're going to learn even more after we return from this message from our sponsors.
At Oak Mountain Academy, our academic excellence shines through innovation and a personalized educational experience. Our pre-K 3 through 12th grade environment offers a family-oriented atmosphere. We are an independent school with faith-based values and an academy honor code. Our academic standards prepare our students for college and beyond. I'm Patrick Duran, headmaster, inviting you to visit us on the mountain or at oakmountain.us. Come see how our warriors are creating legacies.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong. That's Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Gredick, your host. We're talking with Jason Swindle, criminal defense attorney. Our topic, of course, is packing the court, and very timely in that this evening they're apparently going to vote on Amy Coney Barrett, is Trump's third pick for the United States Supreme Court. We're talking about packing the court, and it is an issue in the presidential campaign. But it's a very serious issue. That's why I really wanted to bring you in, because it really goes to the fundamental formation of our constitutional republic in that it's very dependent upon separation of powers. So address it from that point of view. If the court is packed, if we go from, you know, 9 to, I think they're adding 6, right, or talking about that'd be 15, does it turn the Supreme Court into a super legislature?
I don't know if I would term it that way, but if a president was successful in packing the court, which I don't see how that could happen right now with the composition of the Senate, that wouldn't necessarily be a super legislature. It would be, I guess the kindest term would be a mess. You would have a lot of new justices there. They'd probably have quick confirmation hearings. Cases would start going to the whole court, and you would have opinions that you'd have more people to have to decide on what to do on a case. And it's also just people view this as a power grab by the executive branch, by the president. And, you know, back when FDR did this, there were significant consequences to him. I mentioned that he lost a lot of political capital. His own party turned against him briefly. Of course, Republicans were always against him. He was criticized in the press. I mean, it was his biggest political defeat, other than when he lost the vice presidential race back in 28. But interestingly enough, FDR got his own way, because he served 12 years. He actually picked 8 of the 9 judges who were on the Supreme Court when he passed away. So there was only one on the court that he did not nominate. Hmm. So that's why the New Deal was so smooth afterwards. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a lucky consequence for him, okay? When the Biden team brings this up, and you look back at history, it's such a disaster. The people don't like it. His own party won't like it. And, you know, as the cliche goes, history will repeat itself. What makes matters worse is when he's asked about it, he won't give an answer. If he said yes, I think that would be better for his, you know, if he just admitted that that's what he's going to do, because it is what he's going to do.
But now he would have to have a Democratic Senate to do this, right?
Yes, and that could happen this fall. Yeah. You know, this election is maybe the most important one since 1860. But with this rhetoric, the general public looks at this as a power grab, as I mentioned. There was no group other than New Deal people back in the 30s who felt comfortable about this. I mean, seems like you're acting like a dictator. You are taking as much power from the other branches as possible. And while it might be something that would be legal and constitutional, it would be the worst political move that I can imagine Democrats can make. And they've already kind of made it by putting it out there in desperation. Because the way that the court is structured now, particularly if Ms. Barrett is confirmed, this court will be solidly conservative for the next probably 40 years. So this is a desperation move for sure. But it didn't have to happen that way. This will be a tight presidential race. And all this does is undermine Democrats in getting people elected. One other quick thing I want to tell you about. Not only did it hurt FDR when he tried this, but in the next election, the midterms, the Democrat Party lost a net of 8 seats in the U.S. Senate and 81 seats in the House of Representatives in the 39 midterm elections. That's an eye-opener.
So if it doesn't turn them into, according to the super legislature, it does move them more toward policymaking, correct?
I don't know that it makes them more of a policymaking entity. I think it just simply, if it were to happen, let's just say Biden wins and he does this, what he's going to do is try to push through liberal judges, justices. Now, right now, we barely have a majority, we being Republicans, in the Senate. If it stays that way or even gets a little bit bigger, that's going to be very difficult for him. But if we lose some Senate seats, which, you know, I hate to say this, but could happen in Georgia even, then it would be Joe Biden's, it would be his road to go. And he could do whatever he wanted to do.
Our guest this morning is Jason Swindle, criminal defense attorney, and we're talking about packing the court. We're going to take a break, hear from our fine sponsors, and we'll be back with more after this.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. Strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong. That's Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong.
A well-rounded education includes much more than just academics. At Oak Mountain Academy, we encourage our students to find their niche in any of our 42 co-curricular opportunities. Over the past 5 years, we have brought home 5 state and 20 regional athletic titles. Our one-act play and literary teams continuously compete at the region and state level, and our academic teams bring home first place more than not. We are warriors creating legacies. To learn more, visit oakmountain.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. Delighted to have you with us this morning. We're talking to Jason Swindle, criminal defense attorney, who's writes local articles. And one of the most recent ones was about packing the court, which, of course, is a topic in the presidential election and timely for today because Amy Coney Barrett should be up for a vote this evening. We've talked about, and it's been a common topic for years now, a term called judicial activism. Where basically, and I'll let you define it better certainly than I can, that the justices are not are interpreting Constitution for their own political, if you will, purposes. I've always noticed that the way to do that is to, in an opinion, to put in a phrase like the right to privacy, and then later decisions can go back, grab that phrase as a precedent, and before you know it, wham, bam, you got a whole nother constitutional right that's nowhere in the Constitution. Packing the court, to me, seems like it's a way to just fast-track judicial activism. Is that a reasonable assessment?
I don't know that I agree with that 100%.
Well, I'll take 98%.
98, that'll work. Okay. Well, I think my issue with that is judicial activism is when a judge puts himself in a place where he wants to be a legislator, and he or she doesn't like a law. And so they will find a way around striking that law down or getting the result that they want. Not the result the Constitution or state and federal law dictate with the facts, but it's what they want because it's their beliefs. Now, if you pack a court, each justice is different. Some of them may be activists. Some of them may not be. More liberal judges tend to be more activist, but there are some conservative judges who are that way too. Mm-hmm. Recently in Georgia, and this might be a good example here, Chief Justice Melton, who's a good friend of mine, one of the kindest people you'll ever meet, but he's issued a number of emergency orders that interfere with the separation of powers, that push the General Assembly aside. And this is how it happens. In his orders, he tolls or suspends the time limits on constitutional rights, like the right to a speedy trial. There's a statute in Georgia that says if you've been in jail for 90 days without indictment and don't have a bond, you are entitled to a bond by law. In his order, he basically says that statute doesn't apply because I'm stopping the time limits on this. That's a clear interference with the legislative function and that part of the separation of powers. Now, people might argue, well, the General Assembly and the governor gave away their power by passing those two laws. But nowhere in the Constitution does it say that one branch can voluntarily give their power away to another. So we'll see how that constitutional challenge that I filed comes out. Because I'm asking the court to declare the two statutes that Justice Melton relied on unconstitutional.
Anyway, we're on, just to mention that we're on Facebook Live, so if you have any comments or questions, feel free to do this, to, you know, post something there. This is, and looking at the comments now, this is really more of a foundational principle, the separation of powers. And you would think that Congress would be violently opposed to this. This is really more than a political issue as such. I mean, we mentioned Biden-Harris, but it's really a very significant change in the overall foundational structure of our government. And while we may kind of parse terms in terms of judicial activism, your example indicates of what out of control, if you will, judiciary can do and be. Is that correct?
That is correct. One of the biggest problems with the statutes that Justice Melton relied on, particularly the second one, the last part of it says that a judge in a judicial emergency can do X, Y, Z. And then you've got a catch-all at the bottom which says They can do anything else pretty much that they want to do that's deemed proper. Now, we've seen how emergencies in history, where somebody's given emergency powers, have ended up very badly. And again, I think Justice Melton is a tremendous jurist, very good friend. But I agree to disagree on the way that he handled this judicial emergency, particularly with the time limits.
So I take from that that you could see something similar with the U.S. Supreme Court if we move in this direction. That we'll be more in that kind of dictatorial, if you will, posture.
You know, I think it depends on, number one, if Biden gets elected. Number two, what does the Senate look like? And number three, like I mentioned earlier, is the individual personalities of the justices. We're so used to 5-4 decisions until recently. We've had a split court.
And this has been going on for decades, correct?
At least since maybe right after Roe versus Wade.
Well, that's quite a while.
Yeah. When it became the Rehnquist Court, I think in 1983.
You're talking half a century.
Yeah. That's when it became 5-4 conservative. Of course, you had swing voters like Sandra Day O'Connor, Justice Kennedy. We really don't have a swing voter now. Some people say that Chief Justice Roberts is, but that, I've not seen that.
Well, that criticism was regarding Obamacare, primarily.
It was, and yeah. Really, that's the only criticism that's been widespread.
We're going to run out of time, but I think it is important to emphasize that this is a serious issue that goes beyond politics. Give us your definition of what we hear the term originalist or textualist, I believe it is. When we talk about packing the court, when we're talking about judicial activism, we're talking about whether or not how would you describe it, whether or not we interpret the Constitution as a living, breathing document for today, or whether or not we go by the letter of the Constitution as it was founded in the original days, as I think emphasized in the Federalist Papers. How do you describe originalism?
Well, let me describe all three of those philosophies first, okay?
Okay. You only got about 2-3 minutes.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, go.
The living, breathing document philosophy is held by mostly liberal judges who believe that the Constitution, it was great back then, but because we have computers, we have technology, society's changed, we need to get the Constitution to change with that. Which all that does is make the Constitution guidelines, okay? Now, originalism is different than reading the plain language of the text, textualism. Originalism is looking at the Constitution and deciding cases based on what the original intent of the founders was. Textualism, which is the most common sense way to look at it, is simply reading the words of the Constitution and applying those words to a case or controversy. Now, sometimes it's ambiguous, I understand that. But the focus is on the wording, not a court changing.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in, and thank you for being with us and talking about this very important topic. And we love to have you back as you write your columns and everything. I understand also it's your birthday today.
I didn't know if y'all catch that or not.
Yeah. Well, good. I won't ask you how old you are, because that's...
I was born about an hour and a half from now.
From now?
Okay. 30 years ago.
Okay. Well, in an hour and a half, we'll celebrate your birthday. How about that?
Thank you,
Steve. Our guest this morning is Jason Swindle, and our topic this morning has been Packing the Court. We thank you for listening. We thank our sponsors, Oak Mountain Academy and Tanner Health System. Go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.